beginning of speaking here, and now I'm not very scared. I can talk on the phone, on the microphone. I mean, not phone. I don't have a phone. Why are you laughing? It's serious, you know. I don't have a phone. Like, no one can call me. So yes, this is me. This is Froy. I'm graduating. I'm a senior right now. Next, I'm leaving pretty much. I might be able to make the next show, but I don't think so, because my family will be here, and those guys will probably want to see some of the city. I'm not going to be stuck, everyone, my 1,000-member family, in this little space. So I don't know if I will be able to come. I'll be here in Boston. The last time will be Friday, and that's it. And from there, I'll see someplace around the world, and hopefully see you. All of you radio listeners that are listening to us, getting excited about this guy leaving, finally.
Probably. I don't think that's true. No, I was just laughing because I don't think you realize how much we appreciate having you here. And we're going to miss you a lot next year. Like, really. You should definitely call us, you know, during the show and give us, like, random comments as well as, you know, awesome music pieces that we could play. So yeah, thanks so much for being with us for all these years, and yeah, we'll miss you.
Nice. Reports are coming in.
Oh, due to technical difficulties. Excuse me? Hello?
Spiel.
marhaban.
Yes, marhaban. And marhaban fi music for human. I am a doctor Jalis Sakran. And my goodness, how are you? Returning again, Ivan the Mellow.
Добрый вечер, дорогие слушатели.
Welcome, Ivan.
Спасибо.
Ivan is Siberian, which, as all should know, is enough. We also have with us, appearing for the first time, Zolar, the Master of Dreams.
Hello.
Welcome, Zolar.
Thank you.
Zolar is indeed magnificent. His mastery of dreams extends quite far back. I remember seeing a talk that he gave in Bonn on dreams. And Zolar, I believe that was about the presence of the natural things, things that are natural to the person in the dream. I remember you mentioned the fact that most people dream in their native language.
Yes. I think that you'll find as it's difficult to interpret what it is that you're dreaming about, but it kind of comes through and shows your true self. And you can learn a lot about your inner thoughts or who you are on the inside by tuning in and listening closely to what your soul is trying to tell you, to convey to you through your dreams.
So for example, I recently had a dream that I was pulling my teeth out, and I'm not sure, maybe that would mean that I am about to lose my teeth. I'm not sure.
Typically, what these dreams represent is a self-consciousness, or, you know, as the media is putting more and more emphasis on physical appearances, it sort of is a reflection of people's insecurities. Maybe you've got bad teeth, literally, or there's something about your physical appearance that you are uncomfortable with and wish to change.
Well, I do have a rather expansive mustache, which I do admit to being somewhat self-conscious of. Ivan, do Siberians dream also? It's true that all people dream.
Yes, Siberians, in fact, are well known for their dream-like spiritual experiences.
In particular, the lucidity and the relatability of their
dreams. Yes, the lucid dream is an occurrence quite frequent in the Siberian folklore. And I did have this question to our new host. For some reason, and mind you, this is the first time that I'm obliged to see this host in person, but for some reason I remember in the not too distant past scouting for conference venues, and very strange dream that I had maybe just a couple of weeks ago. Is there any significance to this?
You were searching for venues for a conference?
Yes.
Like a New Age conference?
Yes, it was.
I mean, if I may step in for Zolar here, perhaps this signifies your... I assume that you were experiencing difficulty in finding the conference venue.
Yes, and Zolar was instrumental in the, actually quite pivotal in helping us find a spiritual center.
Zolar in particular.
Yes, so that's why I'm...
It's not uncommon to dream about someone you have not yet met. I find it interesting that you had the foresight to know that we would meet today.
You of course, have heard of Zolar as now I'm not sure our listeners will have heard, for example, of Zolar's famous "I dreamt about it and it came true," very large pink encyclopedia of dreams. But we in the New Age circles, people who really pay attention to their dreams and to their thoughts, of course, have long known about Zolar. And you may have been fortunate to have seen him in one of these many conferences that we speak of.
But still, this clairvoyance was very striking. So, Zolar, what do you think of your belated colleague, Dr. Freud?
Yes, Dr. Freud. There's a lot of prevailing wisdom or canonical ways of interpreting dreams, but I try to rely more on my anecdotal experiences with my patients. So I don't know if I put too much stock in Dr. Freud.
I mean, he definitely had some very... well, we've spoken on the show about people who either pay too much attention to the New Age or to science. And I think Freud was one who really ignored spirituality as an experience. And so it's with a grain of salt that we must take all of his findings. And I think that current people in his field feel the same way about him.
Nonetheless, there is a lot to be learned from the contributions that he did make, and it's a good starting point. If it doesn't always lead you to the right interpretation, it is.
Is there something to this idea that dreams are a mechanism of expressing one's sexual repression and trying to come to terms with it?
Do you feel that that's what your dreams are telling you?
Yes and no. I wouldn't be in a position to reinterpret my dreams. I don't think I have the necessary New Age learning.
Oh, well, that's okay. Anyone can interpret a dream. Actually, I'd love to hear about a dream that you've had recently.
Okay, so I had this recurring nightmare. And this is a nightmare about my Siberian alma mater, the Siberian Heights Institute of Technology. And I have this recurring nightmare that I had a research advisor who was a sociopathic slave driver. And it's every time I keep waking up from this horrible nightmare, I just cannot believe how that has been implanted in my Siberian consciousness, because this is just so fantastic even for a dream to imagine.
Yeah, it's sometimes difficult, I find, also upon waking, to really realize that the dream state has passed and the nightmare is over, and we are in the warm and bountiful land where no one can harm us.
So is there any significance to this image of my fictional advisor throwing keyboards at
helpless students?
Yes. What is the significance?
These dreams are also, you know, not uncommon. It typically represents some kind of a conflict with authority. Is there someone in your life who is imposing their will upon you?
Yes, I think I'm known to have a prodigious so to speak drawing to the fighting against authority. So maybe that is it. It's an expression of my will to be dominated.
Well, so I understand. Again, in Freudian terms, this would have a strong sexual implication, but I think that we can rationally say that you are simply an idealist, and you have particular ideals, and this symbolizes not only the experience that you had in Siberia, but also the experience that you subject yourself to, that you are very strict on yourself, and you strongly judge the actions, and you reflect a great deal on the injuries and pains that you've caused others, and the severity of your gaze even upon yourself is something that you find difficult to bear.
So it's a mechanism for projecting one's own weaknesses, so to speak.
It can be.
Perhaps the figure you have authority issues with is yourself, and you want to take charge. And this dream is sort of that bubbling to the surface.
It's very powerful. Are there any dreams that you would care to relate to us?
Actually, yes, I've had a similar dream. I've written it down for you guys in the expectation that it would come up.
Oh, well, please. Please read it to us.
I see myself as I lie there in a moonlit meadow, dreaming inside the dream that I'm revealing that I can see myself from the outside. But the view is a fainting one that ever falls away. I find myself rising, ever rising, until the meadow is but a patch in a quilt that is swallowed by the skies, and I but a thread in the fine fabric that is time. And from that place from where whence I came, I rise past the earth, Mars, the Milky Way, past a swirling disk of amber fire, a maelstrom whose fiery fingers lick the skies. Zooming out forever, I rise. Oh, look at all the fire folk sitting in the air, the bright burrows, the circle citadels there. But friends, the Odyssey is only just beginning. I rise to reach the edge of the world and find it lacks confinement. I can stay, or I can dissolve and step outside of it. At the cusp, with a blinding flash of light, I see that next to it lies another, and another, and another. A whole continuum of parallel worlds. A landscape of infinite possibility, each world with no memory of the events. And another, no memory of the mistakes we've made in this world. I think my dream means this, that we are all like great explorers. Each day, set a course for the world you want to live in. Abandon your pain, your regret, and start life anew each day, plotting the course of your own destiny.
Truly a beautiful image there, Zolar.
Thank you.
When did you have this dream?
I first dreamt this dream in high school. And it recurs once every 2 or 3 months, I would say.
So you continue to experience this vision even to this day?
Yes.
Now that's another topic that I find really fascinating. Although before we get into it further, let's send out an invitation to our listeners to call in if they'd like. The show is not about us disseminating our view. It's really about just connecting. So the number, if you'd like to call in, is 617-253-8810. And we have a really rather intriguing-looking operator standing by. So I was just asking Zolar about... and there it is. We have our first caller. Let's get our operator to patch that through for us. Only too familiar... the temptress, the tone. So as I was saying, Zolar, we often hear of recurring dreams, and is there any significance to them beyond perhaps emphasizing the message of the original dream?
What do they mean for you?
Well, to me, a recurring dream might be a warning... that perhaps you subconsciously feel that you have not taken a particular action. Your subconscious is warning you. You know, listen to me. Why are you disagreeing with me? So, for example, I had... it's interesting. I also had a dream about a spiritual guide with whom I had some disagreements. And he told me later, in our twilight years, when we can look at back at all of this and really laugh, he told me that he had a recurring dream where he would be at a New Age conference, like an international New Age conference, and he would be sitting there, and they would call my name. They would say, Jalis Sakran is presenting something, and... I would walk in a bathrobe, wearing bunny slippers, and carrying a mug of tea, prepared to give my lecture. And of course, everyone is shocked, because even for the New Age community, this is very unusual. And then he looks down, and he's also wearing a bathrobe and bunny slippers, and has a mug of tea, and he wakes up in horror. He did not know what the dream meant, but to me it signified his discomfort with me, his feeling that I may embarrass him. And now we look back and laugh, and I think he really treasures the time that we spent studying with each other.
Well, maybe it's actually just the opposite. Maybe he somehow envisioned himself in his deep spiritual awareness to be...
So there's you're saying that somehow he projected himself on me and he imagined himself becoming embarrassed in this way?
Yes, he felt drawn to you.
Oh, in some other way?
In a spiritual enlightenment sense, yeah.
I see. Well, I have been told I am charismatic.
I have to share this image, actually, of Dr. Sakran being awash in the ecstasy of a dog just last week, who was... really ecstatic at his sense of charisma and also probably his flavor. So somehow Dr. Jalis mesmerized the dog to such an extent that
Ivan, I was embarrassed to tell you at the time, but I had a big wad of bacon in my pocket. Not for myself. It was turkey bacon also, but flavored very similarly to bacon. I found that dogs in the street are drawn to these smells somewhat inexplicably. I like to think it was my charisma, but I think it may have been the meat.
Perhaps it was a little bit of both.
A combination of meat and charisma. Maybe that's what we all are.
Actually, that's what I like to think of you. A combination of meat and charisma. And the mustache.
Thank you, that's very apt.
Both the tangible, physical, and the spiritual combine to make the whole.
Wouldn't it be interesting if there were some alien species with no meat? It was just an energetic core of charisma. And imagine how surprised they would be if they found us and they said, "Look, Bob, big walking blobs of thinking meat, charismatic meat." And that really is what we are. I think it's somewhat delusional to think that we are more than meat. Well, maybe delusional is not the right word, but I think it's definitely valuable to remember that we do have these humble origins.
But of course it matters greatly what kind of meat it is that we envision ourselves to be.
What creature would be the most noble?
Well, I've always had a great deal of respect for the noble buffalo, because its head is about as big as its leg. But that's my view.
I've always actually admired the giraffe, not only for its exotic character, I guess, for a Siberian, it's something that is really powerful in the sense that this image of the long neck going out into the skies and the reach being further than its grasp.
It's like a symbol for hope. Mouth way, way up in the air, trying to bite the stars. Yeah, I've never had a dream about a buffalo. I'm privately somewhat terrified of them. They're huge. You ever seen a buffalo?
I have eaten buffalo.
You have eaten buffalo? So if I were you, I would be especially terrified of meeting one, because maybe it can tell. It looks at you and it says, "You've eaten buffalo."
But all of matter is convertible. That buffalo is actually part of matter that has been flung toward the earth by a solar wind. So in a sense,
so it's all the same. And yet somehow I think that buffalo would not eat buffalo. I mean, they might, but it's, come on, guys, it's a little gross.
So could you relate to us some of the images that you see recurring in dreams, perhaps of buffaloes running wild, of giraffes and other kinds of animals, and sociopathic research advisors?
So you are asking Zolar what sorts of images are prominent in his own dreams or in patients' dreams?
In patients' dreams.
Now, people that have come to me have spoken of spiritual cupcakes, which I find unusual. But I think Zolar will agree that perhaps the dream of finding yourself naked at work is the most common.
Definitely, I hear that all the time. What do you think that represents? I think it's repression, not being able to be creative at your work.
I definitely think there is an element of that there. Being nude. Perhaps repression in a more general sense, too.
Well, the act of being nude is defiance of that repression.
So it's generally rejecting society's imposition of clothing upon you.
Yes, in this case, it's a metaphor for rejecting the rules or the constraints that your workplace is placing on you.
Interesting. Well, I've also heard frequently of flying dreams, dreaming that you are swimming in the clouds or urinating in the sun. Just dreams involving celestial bodies, playing pool with planets, swimming in nebulae. Some of the more unusual myths, I think, also came out of dreams.
What is interesting, Dr. Jalis, is that this connection of dreams and reality, and are we actually living in a dream, or is it the other way around?
Let's bring another voice into the discussion. Caller, welcome to the air.
Dr. Jalis, marhaba.
Marhaban.
How are you? I enjoy the show. And I just want to remind you of a story about a dream, which all know. It's about which is mentioned in all the holy books, and it is about the prophet Joseph.
Mm.
And it's really amazing. I mean, like how he explained the dream of the two prisoners with him, and how it's become true. So I would like to see yours and your host comment on that.
On that particular dream?
Well, yeah.
In my own view, the ability to interpret dreams has been regarded as being particularly well-grounded in an understanding of the divine and of the mechanisms of the universe, so, and particularly of people and how they will interact with each other. And dreams, the reason dreams have meaning is because your subconscious understands more than you do, than your conscious does, and if you don't give it an outlet, it must find some way of communicating with you. And those intense images that actually survive to the morning are particularly important. And in the case of Joseph in the holy books, it was regarding the fates of his two companions in the prison. And so it's, of course, no surprise that their subconsciouses would want to speak to them. And it was, again, symbolized to the ancients Joseph's purity, that he was able to decrypt the message.
Yeah, so there are two parts to the whole story. It's the dreamer and the interpreter. So there are two parts in the story. The dreamer who they dreamt about something, and their dream become true. And Joseph, who has the ability, as you mentioned, to explain to them their dream, and explain it to them and give them give one of them a hope, and the other, of course, it was a bad news for the other companion.
I feel a particularly spiritual kinship to this scholar, close kinship.
Yeah, caller, are there any dreams of your own that perhaps you'd be willing to share with myself and with the co-hosts here?
Well, I mean, most of the time, I mean, little dreams that, I mean, like, I remember that I had little dreams that sometimes I dream that I have a lot of something, for example, some grocery. I dream that I have a lot of bread in the fridge, and then I wake up and there's no bread at all. Or it always comes.
So you have dreams like you dream in opposites?
Yeah.
That's confusing.
Yeah.
So you might dream a happy dream, and you wake up and the milk has gone rotten,
yeah.
And there is a mouse there in your bed.
Yeah, exactly.
And someone pees in your Cheerios, and
yeah, something like that.
And the squirrel pelts you with walnuts.
I've actually had a dream where I was being chased by a rabid squirrel, and it was recently my most recent nightmare. A dream where I was actually so terrified that I woke up and immediately began hunting squirrels.
So I know that Dr. Freud has ascribed many of the motivations behind these dreams to the mother-son relationship. Is there any truth to this motive?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Perhaps the image of the prodigal son wasting away his intellectual endowments may be a metaphor for the milk being spoiled, when in fact it is not, or the other way around. It's
milk, or the chalice symbolizing the mother, and the wand symbolizing the son. Yeah, I'm not sure Freud is to be trusted. Freud did say sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Which is, I think, needlessly tautological. Does anyone have dreams of other people? So you don't dream that you are yourself operating on a heart patient. Perhaps you dream that you are a heart patient being operated on by yourself. Does that happen? Whenever I dream, I'm always myself. I'm always a Dr. Janis Sakran, frolicking in the countryside, or doing little jigs, and you know, whatever it may be, falling out of a a plane or climbing a rock mountain or having tea with the mountain. So I'm curious, Zolar, if perhaps you have any insight on that. Do for like little children, for instance, before they are born, dream of themselves? I mean, and really, that's another question: is what do fetuses dream of? And is fetuses the plural of fetus?
Well, Dr. Sakran, we don't actually know what infants dream of. I hope that they have beautiful dreams, but they can't talk to us to tell us.
Maybe there are ways that we could meditate with them and commune with them so that this sort of information could become available. I'm very curious.
Maybe there are.
I know they seem to be somewhat violent, given the incessant kicking and biting and whatnot.
I think if you were trapped in the same tight, moist, warm enclosure for a period of 3 or 4 months, you were just looking around like, what's going on here? I think I'll try kicking this elastic wall and nothing happens. I think what really would have to happen is that the fetus would have to receive some sort of punishment for kicking the wall, like a prenatal spanking, if we wanted the kicking to stop. Otherwise, there is no reinforcement.
I'm firmly against prenatal kicking, frankly. I know that it is a feature of the Egyptian and the Saudi Arabian culture, but in Siberia we just prefer to beat our women.
Not have them beaten by their children prenatally. Well, that's a different view. I can definitely see that. Yeah, I often wonder if the
Is the caller still with us?
Yes, I'm with you guys, talking about kicking and the fetus and the womb. I mean, that's a relation between the mother and her fetus, and it is joy when the fetus starts kicking. So there is no matter, there is no option of punishing. It's a enjoyable thing.
Well, now, caller, I understand that many women experience the fetus squeezing the bladder, forcing the pregnant woman to urinate frequently. And I wonder, again, I mean, I understand that the expectant mother might enjoy a strong kick now and then from the child, which symbolizes perhaps that the child has a future in football, but sitting on a bladder seems frankly abusive, and I do wonder if there was some punitive approach to resolving this. Not that I am in favor necessarily of a capital punishment for children, but I'm just curious to get your views on what should be done to the child that makes his mother pee a lot.
Well, as I mentioned before, the mom will enjoy the whole process of being pregnant, and it's as it said in the old tradition, it's weakness and weakness. I mean, the weakness of the mom. The mom is tired to do anything, to punish or to do any, you know, she's in a state of, we can combine a relaxation and weakness.
So,
and the mom.
Yeah, but so perhaps maybe the this would be a place where the father could play an active role in the pregnancy.
Yeah, but the mother, it's a joyable time for the mom. I mean, it's a painful thing. She cannot sleep very well, but still it's some kind of a relation. She's building a relation with this creature that she holds in her womb. So it's a joyable relation that's grow with time until she had the baby.
Yeah, but caller, I don't think it's only growth that attaches the mother to the child. A mother with a tumor, I think, would not feel any particular attachment to the tumor in spite of its growth.
And we are going to hold.
Caller, it sounds like you are going to Whole Foods.
We're waiting for you.
Okay. Dr. Jalis, thanks so much. I enjoy talking to you, and I have to go and fix dinner tonight.
Well, thank you both, okay. Callers.
Okay, bye-bye.
It's always really nice to hear about people going to the store.
Especially Whole Foods.
Whole Foods is very expensive.
But it's organically grown and produced.
I'm not sure if we should be eating organic food.
So you prefer eating genetically engineered food?
Well, the way I look at it, especially with animals who can feel sadness and happiness, why are we killing the happy animals? We should be killing the unhappy animals and eating them.
There are a lot of unhappy animals.
Well, we should put them out of their misery and make a sandwich.
So, I did have a question about animals having dreams, or if it's in fact perceivable that all of the living creatures, trees and squirrels and walnuts and what have you, have dreams, and while they are chasing Dr. Jalis. Is a dream only something that is attributable to human being, or is it in fact a feature of our sad little existence?
I have a cat who I like to observe. She's very charismatic and expressive. I firmly believe that she can feel, and that she goes through periods of happiness and sadness, just like a person.
So, would you think that the cat often dreams of other cats or mice or...
I think she dreams of high-quality food. Perhaps, like we do.
Perhaps she has dreams of her future, the way we have dreams of ours. Perhaps in her dreams, you speak to her using hormones and smells the way that other cats would, and not as we do with strange breathing patterns.
But then there is also this element of sexual frustration and the mother-cat relationship.
Listen, listen, Ivan. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
In Siberia, we don't have cigars, unfortunately.
You know what a cigar is.
I vaguely recall it from my Cuban wanderings back in the days, but this is actually interesting. Is there any way that maybe you would go about setting the right mood for a dream?
Let's briefly take one more caller, calling us very late in the program. Caller, welcome to the air.
Hello.
Hello, caller.
Hi, thank you. My name is Ivan, too. I was driving and I was wondering a beautiful show do you have tonight.
Thank you so much, Ivan.
And I was thinking all these days about dreams, because I'm the kind of person that are very connected with what is going on with dreams, what dreams change your life and your spirituality. And I was, what happened when you have these repetitive dreams and you are not able to give them a real answer?
You are unable to get a real answer, like to really understand?
Yes.
Well, so in my experience, the dream simply recurs until the underlying issue has been resolved.
Uh-huh.
There's a well-known quote that goes something like, "Everything will be okay in the end. If it's not okay, then it's not the end."
They are very apocalyptic sometimes, but at the end they are very peaceful and very... they are very repetitive since I was 7 years old. And they are becoming more, with more details, with more colors, and more apocalyptic.
The dreams?
Yes.
That's perhaps a matter that requires some attention. So,
is there a defining motif to these dreams, Ivan?
I'm sorry?
So Ivan asked if there was a defining motif, there was a theme. I mean, unfortunately, we're running very, very low on time.
I know.
But,
but I'm sorry.
My image there would be that it's a dream of some vast change that will come. And I assume you've tried various things to fend off the dreams?
Yes, but I think they are message always. I think that dreams are message, and people who has several dreams too many times, they have to share those dreams. It's something that Osho, he used to write about dreams a lot.
Mm.
It's a spiritual catharsis.
Yes, spiritual catharsis, absolutely.
Ivan, I'm sorry, we're going to have to say goodbye. Our time is up.
No, thank you.
But please try calling again next week, and we'll continue our discussion.
No, I would love to be part of, to listen. It was very special to hear you today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ivan.
Okay, good night.
Thank you.
And thanks again to my hosts, Zolar.
You're welcome.
And to Ivan the Mello.
Спасибо огромное.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here at WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Mar Salama.
4 points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Boston, Cambridge, whoever else may be listening, you are listening to WMBR 88.1 FM Cambridge, MIT's public radio station, and you are currently listening to Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Prove to you it's not that hard to find good music if you know where to look, and I'm trying to show you where to look. I'm your host, Josh, and it's the end of the season here at WMBR. We're about to start our new summer season on Monday, but fret not, I will still be here at the same time every Friday night from 8 to 9. But you should know that I sadly won't be here next week because I'll be back in Detroit. My sister's graduation party, that'll be fun. So another good friend of mine will probably be covering. But yes, this is the end of this season. And so what I like to do at the end of every season, if not more often, is I'll play a show instead of off my laptop. I play all vinyl for my own collection. And I was very happy to find this, which you may have heard on here before. RJD2 I use as background music a lot, but I was actually able to find this album in rare form on vinyl, and that made me very happy. But yeah, so we got some new additions to the collection for longtime listeners to add to the vinyl show, and be sure to mix it up a bit. Another one I was very happy to find lately, Death from Above, 1979. If you've listened before, I'm sure you've heard me rant about them plenty. They had a single album around 2005, just two guys, a drummer and a really distorted bass. They were never heard of again after that, and there probably was not many